the latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sports Form Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Form delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and Kent DeSarmo on Afternoon Delights, absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
When you move in right up close to me, that's when I get the shakes all over me. Quivers down the backbone. I got the shakes down the knee bone. Yeah, the tremors in the thigh bone. Shaking all over.
We're back at the races, about 15 to the top of the hour, second half. Little in after a nice visit with Todd Mostoller. Excited about Saturday at Penn. Steve Haskin joining us, and Steve's got some of his favorite things going on. The Epsom Derby Saturday, Steve.
Yes. The fact that the English Derby this year is run on June 1st means there's no conflict with the being run on Belmont Stakes Day. You know, I used to have to watch the English Derby, you know, in the morning line at Belmont Park or trying to find a TV somewhere. Doesn't matter now, but I like the fact that let's put it this way. If it was being run on Belmont Day, I wouldn't be able to watch it because I will be in Lincoln, Nebraska on that day. I'll be there all week, as a matter of fact. So the fact that it's being run this Saturday is excellent. And to add to the fact that it's a really, really good Epsom Derby, one of the best, most contentious I've seen in a long time. I'm looking forward to it. All the English trainers have to do, you know, with good horses, is beat 7, 8 O'Brien horses entered.
Exactly. It's pretty funny. We touched on it.
And they're good, too. I mean, there are four of them that have really legitimate shots of winning this race. But, there's some other good horses there. But one of the O'Brien horses was so impressive that I actually posted something on Facebook about him. He's going to wind up as the favorite, Sir Dragonette. But his victory in the, I might have even mentioned it on the show, but his victory in the Chest of Oz was utterly spectacular. I mean, it's just incredible. But he's got some really, really nice horses with, he's got another horse named Broom who showed an unbelievable turn of foot. Same with Sir Dragonette. They both came from dead last and just blew by the field and won by the length of the stretch. Sir Dragonette just looked incredible the way he did it. But Broom looked awfully good as well. And yeah, and you know, and he's won other preps as well with other horses. Got a horse, Anthony Van Dyke, that's coming off an impressive victory in the D-Stakes at Chester, and Circumus Maximus, who Frankie Dettori rides. Circumus Maximus won the D-Stakes. Andrew Van Dyke won the Linkfield Derby Trial, which is always a good prep because Linkfield is very similar to Epsom. It's the same left-handed course, and it's got that dip, almost like a Tattenham corner. So it simulates Epsom very well. And then, like I said, he's got Broom, who won the Derrenstown Stud Derby Trial, who looked absolutely spectacular, and, of course, Sir Dragonette. And he's got he only has three others besides that. You can count on some of them. You know, with his horses being come from behind horses, and he's not even running his 2,000 guineas winner. So, I mean, it's preposterous. You know, if we complain that Bob Baffert is dominating horse racing here, or Todd Pletcher, or anybody like that, I mean, they don't know what domination is. But there's some other very, very good horses in here. A horse that'll get a lot of play is a horse called Telecaster, mm-hmm. who was very very impressive winning the Dante Stakes, which is probably the leading prep for the English Derby. It's a very strenuous race, and it's run at York, and it's got that long, long straight. But Telecaster, he pressed a very fast pace with the top two opened up like six lengths on the rest of the field, and he was chasing the horse in front the whole way, and he struck the front, and then another horse who was supposed to be a really good horse came charging up on his on his inside, and looked like he was going to blow right by him, and he held him off. So I think I think he's going to be very tough in here as well. And Andrew Balding has got a really nice horse who I like. I thought he was very impressive in his prep. A horse called Bangkok.
Yep.
Who won the Classic Trial Stakes at Sandown, and he showed a tremendous turn of foot. And he's just a beautiful moving horse, and he blew by that field. So he's an impressive horse as well. So it'll be interesting. And that horse that I was telling you about that ran second to Telecaster at Too Darn Hot. He'll like a mile and a half as well.
There's some interesting potential head-to-head choices like Japan versus Norway.
Yeah, right, exactly.
And how about Bangkok?
You got Aidan O'Brien on them, so.
I can't even say the joke. It's so terrible. I won't even attempt it.
Go on.
No.
If it's really bad, then I'm allowed a free one.
No, I can't. No. Believe me. No. Even I am not going to go in that direction.
Actually, that horse that Too Darn Hot is not entered in the race. He's watch out for him in the Irish Derby, but he's not in the English Derby.
Well, and Sir Dragonette looks to go favored. Broom looks like second choice. Telecaster third. Van Dyke about 7-8 to 1. Then Bangkok 9-10 to 1. Japan 10 to 1.
They've all got a shot.
Yeah,
I tell you, the most popular, Kevin Prendergast, who's 86 years old. He's got a horse in there named Mad Moon, who was fourth in the 2000 Guineas. But he ran good enough, and he probably will appreciate the mile and a half. The mile was probably a little too short for him, but I'm sure a lot of people would love to see an 86-year-old trainer win the English Derby.
Turn from the mile and a half Derby to the mile and a half Belmont Stakes, and Steve, we're a little surprised that, you know, after, you know, what ended up being a full field, foolish field for the Preakness, a little surprised that a couple more horses haven't materialized for next Saturday.
I'm shocked. Not only that, but the field keeps diminishing, and we don't know what's happening with Master Fencer. I mean, I don't know what's going on with him. But, you know, I'd say there's some kind of chance he might defect if you know, you don't want to see a horse stumbling in a workout and he, you know, come back with some inflammation. And I mean, that's not a good sign. You know, if there's anything wrong with that horse, they're gonna have to scratch him. So, you know, it's going to be very reminiscent of Casino Drive when he looked like he's going to be the only horse that could run with Big Brown. Do you realize, you know, with Big Brown, just to talk about that race, with Big Brown running, you know, the wacko race that he did and, you know, not being involved at all, and the horse like Tatara winning, Casino Drive, who had won the Peter Pan by like 6 lengths and 147 and change, you know, so he sounded like some freaky horse coming from Japan. He had already won big at Belmont Park, and it was working up a storm, and it was a beautiful-looking horse. If he had won that race, do you realize it would have been the third consecutive Belmont win for this dam?
Yep.
That is, like, so totally unheard of.
Yep.
I mean, to me, that would be more impressive than Woody Stevens winning 5. I mean, the dam only produces one horse a year. So if Casino Drive had stayed in at Belmont, I think there's no doubt he would have won. But can you imagine a dam producing 3 straight Belmont winners? I mean, out of 1 shot a year? That would have been pretty impressive.
Well, but, just the fact we talked at the time, I remember, you know, we had so much fun with it. And, you know, the fact that she'd produced 2 in a row was remarkable.
I know, it is. It's incredible.
Let alone you know, getting a third to it.
Yeah, and 2 horses, by the way, that looked as similar as Mutt and Jeff. I mean, he had a little colt and a big, strong, strapping. He had a little bay colt and a big, strong, strapping chestnut filly.
And Jazzle, the first of the 3. And
Jazzle was like, 15-1.
Yeah.
15, you know, he was a very unassuming little horse. And Rex the Riches was such a, you know, big, powerful Amazon of a chestnut filly. I mean, that is really bizarre, but I mean, I know it's incredible. People don't know the mare is better than Honor. I mean, incredible mare. I mean, that would have been something that never, ever would have been duplicated.
Yeah.
But I'm really kind of disappointed the way the field is shrinking. I mean, we're going to have 8 horses in there. I mean, you would think that this Belmont would have, you know, 14.
I agree. Well, in the gate, they could put 16 if they, you know, if they got it. But I'm surprised. I thought that, you know, last week when there was going to be that, you know, that late rush and there would be some, you know, some movement. But no, it's been very static and. Baffert passing.
It's not really looking like a. You don't get the classic feeling. I mean, it's a good race. You got some good horses in there, but you know, when you're talking about Tacitus as the favorite, and War of Wills second choice. I mean, you know, it's a good matchup. I think that's basically where the race revolves around. But, you know, especially coming off a Triple Crown year. I mean, they had more horses running against Justify trying for Triple Crown than they do here. I mean, you would think that, you know, I'm surprised a horse like Code of Honor didn't show up.
He's pointing for the Dwyer.
Yeah, I know. But, you know, the Dwyer, I mean, you know. I mean, you got a chance at a classic race. I mean, give it a shot. I mean, there's nobody really to be afraid of here. But, I mean, a horse like Everfast, who was such, you know, actually, I should say long shot, 29-1 in the Belmont. He should have been 80-1 in the Belmont.
In the Preakness.
I'm sorry, in the Preakness. But, everybody's talking about him as a contender now. You know, who knows what to expect from him. But, you know, first we lost Game Winner, you know, which was, you know, he would have added a lot to the race. So you don't even have Baffert in here. The Japanese horse at least would add some kind of, you know, foreign intrigue at least to the race. I mean, I'm not counting him out yet. If he comes out.
Dave Grenig, earlier this morning, was at the barn, and they got him more or less an all clear. He walked this morning for an hour. He'll return to the track tomorrow. They said the connections were all positive about how he was moving this morning. So
I can't imagine what that was. I mean, inflammation. I mean, I don't know. I mean, that
wrenched an ankle.
He wrenched
an ankle. He took a little awkward step and was a little tender.
Yeah, well, hopefully he'll be all right. And then you decide not to run Owendale. You would think that he would be a natural going in here, and they're running him in the Ohio Derby. So not many want to go here.
Well, the horse that it's not surprising because we talked to Stanley Huff, you know, right after the Peter Pan, and Stanley was, you could tell, he was not eager to come straight to the Belmont. He's got, I think, some, you know, later season goals that he felt, were more appropriate for Global Campaign. But, I mean, that...
Yeah, well, he's slightly raced. I mean, I could see waiting on him. I don't know if he's a 2.5-mile horse. You don't know. I'd love to have seen him in the race. You know, but a horse like the way Owendale ran in the Preakness, and the way he ran in Lexington, but you know, he's by Into Mischief, so who knows how far he went? He's out of a Bernardini mare, but you know, you don't think of Into Mischief as a Belmont sire. However, you do Tappet, that's for sure. So, I mean, could be Tappet's fourth Belmont winner.
Well, I utilized the Tappet angle in my write-up that'll come out tomorrow. We've got the ExpressBet Belmont wagering guide releasing around noon tomorrow, and I did pick a Tappet, but I picked Intrepid Heart. I went back.
That's a bold pick.
Well, I'm going back to my commissioner play from 4 years ago, which was one of the in a Triple Crown race about as tough a beat as I remember taking. This is commissioner's brother, and there's plenty to like about him coming into this. So,
yeah, you know that, it's the main thing to like. Instead of a touch gold mare,
that doesn't hurt, and I get the sense. It doesn't matter to me at this point whether Johnny and Castellano are going to split Intrepid Heart and spin off, and Todd hadn't made that. I guess they haven't made that determination. Johnny has been.
Oh really? I thought Velasquez was going to ride.
No, as of yesterday or whenever Dave Grenig's most recent Dave's piece, or it might have been Jay actually, it might have been Priv's piece that Todd had not made a determination. I'm going to assume it's Johnny's call.
Yeah, it has to be.
You know, because he rode spinoff three times leading up to the Derby. and then rode, obviously rode Code of Honor, and he's ridden Intrepid Heart all three times. But either guy, either rider, to me, I don't care if it's Castellano or Johnny, I thought Intrepid Heart is going to be a square price, and there's every reason, as long as he gets out of the gate, that start in the Peter Pan pretty much, you know, put him on the defensive. But I was not going to, I just wasn't going with War of Will and Tacitus. That's not an approach.
There's no bargain.
No.
There's no value there at all. The thing with the Peter Pan is that, you know, even though Intrepid Heart was beaten six lengths in that race, he actually got a higher Bristnet number than he did in his first two starts. He's actually climbing every race. So, you know, his late pace figures are strong. So, yeah, I mean, let's put it this way. Johnny V will get his choice, and Todd might recommend which one he thinks he should ride. But I don't think he'd ever tell Johnny V, I want you riding this horse. I think he would always leave it up to him.
Now, what's tricky is the two of them, both Intrepid Heart and Spinoff, have something of a similar style. I mean, they're going to be laying close.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Spinoff, I was high on all year. I thought he actually had a shot in that Derby at one point. You know, he was only like, you know, four and a half, five lengths or so off the pace, and making a pretty good run, and then just backed up completely right out of it. But he's a very good horse too. But he's by Hard Spun out of a Gone West mare, and Zaftig was more of a miler. I think Intrepid Heart definitely has more of a Belmont pedigree than Spinoff does. I mean, the Hard Spuns can carry their speed, but still Hard Spuns by Danzig, who has produced horses to go a distance, but he's mostly a sire of good mile and a half type horses. Same with Hard Spun, and same with Gone West. Even Gone West decided a Belmont winner, but that was commendable. Was a phony. That was maybe one of the worst Belmonts ever. But Gone West normally is a sire of mile and eighth type horses, as he was. So, you know, pedigree wise, I would definitely go with Intrepid Heart. Look at it this way. If you're looking for value and you don't want to bet the two favorites, there's not a lot in there to choose from. I guess you could look at Mark Cassie's other horse, Sir Winston.
Sir Winston, absolutely. I picked him fourth.
Okay. I mean, you know, he definitely has a shot off the Peter Pan.
What's wrong with Tax?
He's been consistent. I mean, he showed nothing in the Bluegrass Stakes. But, you know, even in the Tampa Bay Derby when he was fifth, he came from like 15 lengths out of it. He was beating like four lengths or so. So, you know, he's a horse that's, you know, he's got a good turn of foot. Sometimes he throws in a clunker like he did in the Bluegrass, for some reason. I know he got bumped around at the start, but, you know, it was just a bad race. But he came back in to beat a Pan, which is what's important. So he's got a race over the track.
Yeah.
And the thing is, you look at the two Broodmare sires. Like I said, I love Touch Gold as a Broodmare sire, you know, for a lot of reasons, personal reasons as well. And Sir Winston is out of the Fleet Alex mare. And I got a lot of attachments to Fleet Alex, who was an also a Belmont winner. And he's by Awesome Again. So he's certainly bred to go the mile and a half. So I wouldn't be surprised to see Sir Winston win. But, you know, his style of running is actually not conducive to the Belmont Stakes.
Right.
You normally don't see horses coming from that far out of it to win the Belmont. You know, you want to see horses forwardly placed. But again, I don't know how many are going to have in here.
Well, you know, it looks like
nine,
eight or nine. I mean, Jovia, the addition of Jovia, and he seems pretty much confirmed per Grenig and Priv. I guess I guess he's your speed, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I don't know. He should. I don't know what he's doing in there. I mean, he's not. I don't think he can carry a speed a mile and a half, but he's definitely speed. How about what he called, by the way? What is that? Nobody's mentioning it at all. What about Tax?
I started to bring him up. You know, he's by Arch. He's out of a Giants Causeway mare. And
oh, yeah.
There's every reason to think that this is very much to his liking. And, you know, he absolutely, you know, will, in fact, you got to imagine Jovia first and Tax will want to sit second.
Tax looked like he was absolutely hating that track. He was on the rail, literally. I mean, sitting like right on the rail the entire race. So he was getting a lot of, you know, mud kicked back in his face, and he just didn't put out. And if you watch the race, you'll see Junior Alvarado in the stretch completely eases him. So he was back in the middle of the pack. You know, he's running like six lengths off the pace. But stuck on the rail the whole way, and he just never showed any inclination to do anything in the race. So it just looked like he did not like the slop at all. And like I said, don't go by getting beat 15 lengths, because he was being eased throughout the stretch. But you know, I mean, you look at his. Let's put it this way: if Tassel is the favorite. You know, he ran a hell of a second to Tacitus in the Wood Memorial, which actually is a very good Belmont prep. The Wood Memorial might not be a good Derby prep anymore, but it's a good. It's always been, you know, throughout history, it's always been a good prep for the Belmont Stakes. But you know, you look at his races. You got to remember, before the Derby, you know, he's coming off of three straight mile and eighth races. Nobody's done that. How many times do you see young horses run three consecutive mile and eighth races before the Derby? You know, he's running mile and eighth as a two-year-old. So he's got a lot of foundation under him. I certainly, if he's a price, I certainly wouldn't throw him out at all. Not with his pedigree. And, you know, he's going to be right up there. But I'm with you. I think Intrepid Heart should run a good race. Again, I'm not crazy about horses with three starts going to Belmont, but you know, you mentioned commissioner, and you know, Pletcher's done that. You know, he's won big races with horses with three starts. Materiality, I think Constitution, right? He was very lightly raced, if I remember correctly.
No, and you know, immediately.
Excuse me, one second. I'll tell you another horse, by the way. What's that people forget about? A horse that, to me, would have become a tremendous horse. Fletcher had a horse he ran in the Derby off of three starts.
Materiality.
He ran his horse in the Derby with three starts, and the horse like stumbled at the start, and he ran okay. But he came back and ran an unbelievable race in the Belmont Stakes. An incredible race. One of the best losing performances I've ever seen.
Dunkirk.
Yeah, Dunkirk. That horse would have been that was a very talented horse.
Yes, he was.
You know, he just went into the Derby with three starts. He just wasn't enough. He got into trouble early in the race. Like I said, he got banged around, almost stumbled, flipped heels, whatever it was. He had no shot on a sloppy track and that crazy Mind That Bird race. My God, you know, that rate, when he comes back again to get second from Mind That Bird, after Mind That Bird passes him in the stretch, if he sets the pace, that would have been a really good horse. So one thing about Fletcher, when it comes to the Belmont, he's done well with very lightly raced horses.
Agreed. Dunkirk was a personal favorite.
I loved him. He was destined to be a really top class horse.
Well, he was sweet too. He was a fun horse to be around. He had a lot of personality and was a kindly type. And it's actually one of the reasons we claimed Williams Lucky Gray, who was a daughter of Dunkirk, and that was one of my motivations when we claimed her, and she was tremendous for us for 2+ years. 3.
Yeah. No, I mean, I like your selection. I mean, let's put it this way: Intrepid Art, after his maiden race, everybody was looking at him as like, you know, maybe the best 3-4 in the country off his career debut. And then, you know, like a lot of horses do, how many times do you see horses who win, you know, especially your Pletcher horses, but, you know, who break their maidens first time out or second time out, you know, and win, you know, by the length of the stretch. But that, you know, when you put them in against winners, it's a tough go. And, you know, his second race wasn't as impressive, but I thought he ran a very gutsy race anyway. You know, he did something, you know, first race he led the whole way. And this time he had to come from off the pace, and he had to make up a few lengths in the stretch, and he got up and won it.
Well, and he, at the time, after he shipped him to Oaklawn, and he broke his maiden in February, Todd was on for, I forget who else had won, but we brought him up in February, and Todd said, this is, you know, we're, you know, I said, what's, you know, are you going to try to get him to Derby? He said, no, he's a Belmont horse. And, I mean, he made that decision in February. So there was real intent here with him from early on. And it wouldn't occur to people at a glance, but the Peter Pan was his first time going around one turn. So.
Right.
You know, he debuted around two turns, and the race at Keeneland, the allowance win, was around two turns. So, you know, he was on his heels. When he didn't start sharp, he was in trouble in that Peter Pan. So I'm going to shrug that off, and, you know, we'll go for a bit of a price.
Yeah. He's had three starts, but it's not like his first start was at 6 furlongs or 7 furlongs.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
He's running a mile. He's never run, you know, shorter than a mile. So, for three starts, he's got foundation under him. Let me ask you this, by the way: do you think there are any owners that would be more thrilled to win a classic race than the Lowe's? I remember when they won the Arkansas Derby. And I thought he was going to burst out in tears after the race. He was so emotional.
It would be.
And what do you know? He's bred by Winstar Farm. What else is new?
Well, and Winchell.
But it's always Winstar Farm and somebody now. But, you know, it's still, you know, Winstar Farm, they're just everywhere.
Well, they've actually been kind of quiet through these first couple of legs, you know.
Yeah, they've got some good horses, but you know, not like last year,
the last couple of years. No, by the way, speaking of which, to shift gears away from Belmont for a minute, I don't know if you had a chance to listen, but. I certainly on Tuesday was extolling the increasing virtue of last year's 3-year-olds, courtesy of Vino Rosso's performance.
You know, I was gonna. It goes a lot deeper than that. In fact, I was all prepared to. I've been debating before I left whether I should. I've already written a column. And it's just a question of whether I want to post it, but you know it keeps adding. I think we brought this up the last time. If you look at the horses that Justify beat last year, and I'm always a firm believer in you never ever judge a crop until the following year when you see how these horses do. Because I've seen it too many times. I remember with the Ali Sheba crop after he won the Derby, they were knocking that crop as being a terrible crop. They ran the Derby in 2:03, and there was no way that this was a good crop. By the end of the year, they were calling it one of the greatest crops of all time. So it's just way too early. To me, it's way too early to judge a crop. But, I mean, you start looking at the... I mean, not only that, by the way, but not only did he beat Vino Rosso twice last year, but he also beat the third-place finisher, Lone Sailor.
Yep.
And you got Quip and Lone Sailor, man, 1-2 in the Oaklawn Handicap. He had tenfold, won the Pimlico Special. And let's not forget Gronkowski was beating the nose in the Dubai World Cup. Even though he's not around anymore, you know, you look at Bravazo. Look at the races he ran against older horses last year. He got beat second. He got beat a half a length in the Grade 1 Clark. And he finished third in the Grade 1 Breeders' Cup Third Mile. You know, he placed in the Travers and the Haskell. Tenfold won the Jim Dandy. I mean, the list goes on and on of the horses that he beat in the Triple Crown and what they're doing now.
Well, and I'm glad you brought up Tenfold. Came back, won the Pimlico Special last week.
Yeah, I know. I just mentioned that. Every week somebody. You know, going back from the Oaklawn Handicap to the Pimlico Special to the Gold Cup. I mean, every week a horse is winning that was beaten by Justify.
Yeah.
Anybody who, like I said, I had all of this, I was comparing it to, the 87 crop. And I'm a firm believer. Look at horses like Seattle Slough and Affirmed. These are two horses that are, ranked right up there as among the truly all-time greats. If they didn't run at four, if they retire at three, where they'd be ranked, even though they won the Triple Crown, they'd be ranked somewhere where Justify is ranked. They didn't become truly great horses until they were four. Can you imagine if Secretariat and Sham had run at four? Secretariat, Sham, and Forgo running as four-year-olds. So, to me, it's imperative. You look at a horse like Dr. Fager. Look at more recently. I mean, California Chrome, he didn't peak until he was five. Gunrunner didn't peak until the end of his four-year-old campaign, early five-year-old. I mean, this is what we miss in horse racing now. We're missing horses peaking at the, when horses normally peak, which is four and sometimes five. And certainly not in May or June of their three-year-old year. So I'm not saying that Justify beat a tremendous crop of horses or this is one of the great crops or anything like that. But I think they're proving that they were talented horses. They might not have peaked, neither did Justify. You think we saw anywhere near the best of Justify in the Triple Crown? What he would have been as a four-year-old.
Right.
So, I mean, but the fact is he did beat... horses who had talent, because that talent just doesn't emerge as four-year-olds. It's there. They might not have, might not have been close to their peak, but you can say that for all the horses going in there. So anybody who knocks the crop, just wait a while, be a little patient. I can't see how anybody would knock it now after these horses are winning every week. The older horses. And like I said, if it wasn't for that little nose at the finish, and Gronkowski would have won the Dubai World Cup.
Yep.
He was second in the Belmont. Vino Rosso was fourth in the Belmont. So all of a sudden, the Belmont field that looked like it was is not so anymore.
Yeah, and I'm kind of
Lone Sailor. He just keeps picking up a check in everything.
Yeah.
He was flying at the end of that Gold Cup. He was just way too far back.
And I'm thumbing through to see if I can't find any some of the horses that have cut back too, that on the sprint end or went. Catholic Boy. Catholic Boy, you got to throw Catholic Boy into this, don't you?
Yeah. I mean, he didn't face Justify, but he's still part of the crop.
Exactly.
And the thing is, you're talking about horses cutting back. What about Promises Fulfilled? He won two grade ones.
Yep.
And he was, you know, Kurtzevay beat him as well.
There you go. Good job.
You know, he's a multiple grade one winner. So, you know, the list continues. It just bugs me when people start saying, "I beat nothing. He, you know, lousy crop of horses." Wrong.
Exactly. Steve, I got a nice email to read to you that's going to be very helpful for next week. And now I've lost it. Oh, my God. Where'd it go? Come on.
An email about me about, babysitting
no,
my
about,
grandson all week?
About going, no, going to Lincoln, over to Lincoln Racecourse to watch the Belmont.
I would love to do that, but I would have to take Thea with me, and I won't have a car seat or anything. And
well, wait a minute, Joan can watch him for an hour and a half.
Well, no, she could. Except here's the deal, you know, Mandy's rehearsing every day, so we're going to both be watching him, and then her performance is Friday and Saturday, so I'm going Friday, and Joan is watching Thea on Friday. And then she's going to the show on Saturday, so I'm alone with Theo on Saturday. So, and like I said, I got to figure out a way to watch it because they don't get regular TV. They just get Netflix and Hulu and Amazon and those things, and unless one of the stations that they get, you know, like a Spectrum where you can get regular cable TV on there. I don't know if any of them. NBC, but I got to figure out a way to watch the Belmont.
You know what? That it sounds to me like they're basically watching via the Roku.
Yeah, I've got Roku. I don't think they have Roku. I think they have something else.
Interesting.
I know Roku. You could watch Spectrum on there.
Well, you could watch the Naira. You can watch the Naira feed on Roku.
Oh really?
Okay. Yeah. Yep. So you may be watching it on your phone on New Jersey Bets. That's it, right? You got a New Jersey Bets account?
I do. I just they just sent me a check for $1,200
from your big score from your hit. That's right. Good shit. Listen to you. Look at and he's not redboarding everybody. He laid that bet out. Good job.
Yeah. That was so great, by the way. You know, Friday, as soon as the betting opened, I went on with like you're losing money. I put in like $50 or something like that. Well, actually, no. I think when you sign up, they give you like a free amount of bets.
Yeah.
So I took that, and I won with it, and I increased my bankroll to like over 100. I forgot who it was. Who was it? It was somebody, I bet, I guess on the Triple Crown Trail. Somebody that won. I forgot who it was, but I made a bet, and I got it up there. So I already had my Derby betting money without having to put any money in. I already had, you know, over $100 in the account by hitting that one winner. So that was great. I was able to
look at you to
make my bets. And then whatever bets I didn't make on there, I made it, you know, at Mammoth where I went, which was exactly the other way, you know, because I try to make the bets as simplified as possible on there. But all the, you know, at Maximum Security with Country House and several other long shots. So I had, you know, either way, but I was thrilled, you know, all of a sudden. Well, you know, all of a sudden you go on the New Jersey Bets, and which is my account, and all of a sudden you see $1,332 on there. I go, whoa, where'd that come from? You know, it's not like real money; it's just a number. So you know, all you do is just fill out a withdrawal, and three days later, I had a check for $1,200.
Feeling good, I love it. Well done.
So that was fun. I enjoyed betting this way. And I like betting where you're not betting money. You're betting numbers only.
Good job. No, that was you. Well done. Well, we'll get some final thoughts for Belmont. We'll talk to you from Belmont next week. Won't be the same.
Belmont. I'll be in Lincoln.
Exactly. But Lenny will be with me. So we'll do. We'll have you in Lincoln and Lenny next to me.
Can't beat it. Well, I know Lenny. The thing is, Lenny's covering the Belmont. Lenny couldn't care about the Belmont. As long as he's got two dinners scheduled at Piccolo Busola this year, I think. And he's got all his stuff down pat. He's got everything ready to go. He's got his Chinese restaurant that he goes to, and he's got his Italian food. And the only thing missing is our deli. We can't do a deli anymore because of Naira. They have to, you know, they had a lot of nerve making Friday a big steak day. So all those seats are reserved for you were up there for those. Where we just hang out on the third floor clubhouse eating, everybody else was eating pastrami and corned beef sandwiches, and I was having my tuna sandwiches and knishes and kasha vanishkas, and that was fun. So
it was.
Lenny comes there to eat. then he looks forward to his breakfast at the morning line.
Which I missed that too. We had a lot of fun.
Morning line, have a nice big breakfast. We did that last year because, you know, Joan and I went to the Belmont last year because I was doing a, you know, photo signing, you know, on the secretariat table there.
Right.
So Leonard took care of everything for that. So, got us a box. So that was kind of cool.
No, those were fun days. We had some nice the Piccolo Busola, right? We had those dinners and
yeah, well, I think
some
I
great
think,
traditions.
Maybe what you, one time you might have come to our, which unfortunately we had a break last year, but you know we did it for 25 years. We all met at the Bocce, all the
right.
old racing.
I think I went once.
Everything. Yeah. I think you were there once or twice.
One time. Yes.
Yeah. So we would all meet at Bocce, which is right up the road from Piccolo Busola. And then after the races, you know, John and I would always go to King Umberto to have dinner after the races. Last year was great because Baffert had a whole room. They had big balloons and little balloon-shaped Justifies hanging there and that was great, but yeah, we had dinner at King Umberto afterwards.
Yeah, I was there. You were
just
against
the
wall.
Fest. The Belmont is one big fest.
Yeah, we were there with you.
You were at a big table. You had a bunch of people there.
Well, I got to talk to the boys. I got to talk to Rosario and Giro Going to see if I imagine they're going to have to bring back my Brujol, the Bix Brujol that was the best seller.
Is it still on the menu?
It as a special, but I imagine it's the defending champion. They got to bring it back.
That's funny.
and they can't use the Baffert and Smith Triple Crown. Let me see what else. They could still do Siaka's soft shell crab.
Oh, okay, that sounds good.
But
Brujol's not my speed, but you know that.
Well, I proved them wrong. They didn't think they said I don't know if it's going to be popular, and it was a home run. So
Steve, it wasn't the Brujol; it was the Bic.
No, it was the Brujol because nobody makes it anymore. I mean, you got to have a grandma to have it anymore. So when it shows up on a menu and even in a lot of good Italian restaurants, they only run it as a special because it's a big pachki. It's a big, and the other twist that I threw at him, I said, not beef Brujol. I want pork Brujol. And that gave it the little extra something. They're both great. They're both outstanding. There's nobody loses when they order Brujol. Everybody wins.
Speaking of that, by the way, I gotta tell you, this, you know, this company, you know, it's called Beyond Meat. They make hamburgers, Beyond Burgers, and they are something called Crumble, which is like it, you put it in spaghetti and you got
the meat replacement item. Yeah.
It's, you know, so it's strictly plant based. But I mean, it makes an incredible bolognese. But they make sausages too. I mean, Joan goes out and buys baked beans, and we get sauerkraut, and with these big sausages, they're so juicy and so meaty. I swear to God, I'm eating meat, and their burgers are like eating a real burger. I mean, it's unbelievable. And Joan's far from a vegetarian. She eats meat all the time, but she can't remember having a better burger than this burger and better sausages than this sausage. I mean, it's incredible stuff. So that I really get a meat fix out of that.
There you go. I've heard of it, and
West made a lasagna when we were in Lincoln like a year ago or so. West made a like a lasagna, like a vegetarian lasagna. Packed it with all kinds of stuff, but he put this crumble in there. And oh my God, it really, it's like eating a regular meat lasagna. You know, it's like eating or all of bolognese.
Nice. Beyond Beef.
Beyond Meat. And it's called Beyond Burger.
All right.
Beyond Meat sausages, and then it's called Beyond Meat crumble. And they also have chicken, sliced chicken, that's actually very good.
Well, nobody waves the vegan banner, the vegetarian banner more than Steve Askin. He's the
I still want my ham and salami subs.
he's the tofurkey king.
Oh, just give me one. if I had a last meal, if
you were going to the chair,
last meal, I said, just give me the biggest sub. Like, I want it like 9 foot long. I want it packed with Genoa salami, with ham, with everything you can think of, mortadella,
so
provolone, the sharpest provolone you can find. Just pack it with every Italian meat you could think of, capicola, everything.
That's your swan song.
Yes.
I love it. Well, Steve, I got Tony waiting. Let me get Tony in here, and safe travels. We will talk to you from Lincoln, Nebraska next week.
All righty, Steve. Have a good trip out to Big B.
I appreciate it. A vintage visit from Steve Askin. A meandering 40 minutes. We'll stay right here. We might as well. And Tony is standing by. And in fact, Tony, I flip-flopped you, Tony, because I knew if I put you on after Todd, then Steve would have been really late, and so I took Steve in his normal spot. Hope you don't mind.
No problem, Steve. I caught some of the show, and I've missed the shows lately. But when you were talking about Belmont, and I can remember having the bug and being stabled up there with my contract employer, and we were stabled at Belmont. We'd go to the training track and train, and then we'd go to Pearl's Kitchen. It was Pearl's Kitchen, I believe it was, on the backside of Belmont. And then across the street, I think there was Jack's Diner. I guess they're not even there anymore. But used to love the corned beef specials. Love them corned beef specials from the deli. Had to love those sandwiches, Steve. And that was when weight was really tough to make because you had to do 104, 105 as a bug rider. But I would manage to eat one of them corned beef specials and still make weight that afternoon.
Well, I always need Gary to – I need Siaka to – for the distinction on the kitchens because – There was Chicken Sadie and Black Liz.
I'm talking like 70, 71.
Yeah, 72. that's about
I remember that they were well known, those kitchens, and you know, you either ate there, and if you didn't have transportation, you either ate there or you didn't eat. And everybody likes to eat. You know, it's amazing how times have changed every place. And I was listening when you were talking about, you know, watching on your phone if you're not at the track or whatever, if you're not at access to a TV, you can watch the Belmont on your phone or with the, you can bet from your phone. You can do everything from your phone. And it just reminds me, when I was a kid growing up, if you could afford a TV, it was maybe you had a 13-inch screen TV, and that was if you could afford one. And then in 1959, my dad bought we still lived on the farm, he bought one of the first RCA Victor color TVs, and it was 21 inches, I think, or 24 inches, and that was like you were really living. Now you got TVs, they're 85, 55, 65 inches hanging on the wall, flat screens, and people are looking at a 3-inch screen on their phone. It's like we're going full circle back around. 13 inches, you were poor if that's all you had was a 13-inch TV in the '50s, but you could still afford TV. Now they're watching TV on a 3-inch screen. They had a full circle, and they're bragging about it.
It is funny. I mean, Steve's going to be hung up next week because he's not sure that he can watch it from home. So
he can watch it from his 3-inch screen on his.
That's what I said. That's what I said. He can watch it on the thing on his.
And that's like you're really living when you're doing that. And if you were talking about 5 and 6 and 3-inch screens or 13-inch screens in the '50s, you were a poor family that just barely could afford TV. You know, and that just reminded me when my dad bought that RCA Victor 21-inch screen TV. It was color. There probably wasn't 5 color TV shows on. You know, everything was black and white. But we had a color TV, Steve, and we were living, baby.
You were hot shit. Absolutely. That. You know, I don't know if you heard earlier in the week, I reached out for Joe Bravo, who had a big holiday weekend, and Joe hit a couple of notes that made me, you know, we talk about you and who else. There was another, since we talked last, too. I forget who else that I talked to that, and you came up.
Oh, my God, and I miss the show, Steve.
Yeah.
I've been getting on horses for Richie Vega and goofing around over there and having a lot of fun.
Well, I said that.
And we wound up getting in 8 2-year-olds he got in. So he said, get on these 4 sets, you know, send them out 2 at a time. And I've been on all 8 of them at some time or another, like all his 2-year-olds, really do. But, you know, that's 2-year-olds. You like them when they go straight and they don't duck out from underneath you and leave you walk back. You got to like them. But, I've been getting on 5, 6 in the morning and really kind of enjoying it, but it's interfering with my radio time listening to you. Yeah. So I'm going to get the earbuds and put the phone in my pocket and listen to you while I'm galloping horses. But just remember, don't distract me. I got to pay attention to these horses. But I'll put the wireless earbuds on.
Well, it must have been with Joe and. Because he was laughing at me because I suggested, you know what it was, and actually you can contribute to this too, because I'm sure you had some plenty of dealings with Jimmy Crupie.
Yeah, JJ, you know I didn't write a lot for him, but you know what, he was a face in the trainers and always in the trainers standing. In Jersey, and you always kind of tried to ride for him because he'd come with a barn full of horses. He'd do a good job. He'd enter them where they could win. And when I learned of his passing, I just thought, well, you know, there's another guy that really contributed a lot to racing, whether he was on the racetrack or at the farm. You know, he did a good job with his horses and lived to the age of 79. You know, it's gone too soon. You won't be forgotten, JJ. He won't be. You know, he made his mark in racing.
Oh, yeah.
He always did a good job with horses, and he was always, taking care of his horses well. And you didn't have to worry about his safety of his horses because you were safe if you were riding for him because he did an excellent job. And guys like that, you know, they'll be missed. They won't be forgotten, but they definitely will be missed.
Well, and he, you know, the decision. What's interesting, and I'd love to get some more about this, is the decision to go to the preparation, the development side of the business, and create. You know, he had to have some foresight to, yeah. You know, to see that, you know, that marketplace was going to be, you know, a big part of, you know, of the landscape, and devoting, you know, specifically to, you know, yearling to 2-year-old conversion, you know, and as an investment strategy too. I mean, whether it was for whether you're developing them for clients or for yourself in a pinhooking. And developing. I mean, it's he saw something, and I I haven't looked at a huge number of articles, but I would love to find some older interviews with him that you know talk about, you know, his understanding and you know his being able to see that opportunity, because he. You know, not only did he go do it and do it successfully, but he also created a facility at Newcastle that, you know, is the, you know, kind of the standard for, you know, for that enterprise. So
it was a facility that, you know, had tremendous amount of respect. But you know what? When it comes to guys that can do that, that they're a special breed. They have a special eye for horses, and it's not just based on what they see when the horse is on the ground and
right.
Speculate. Well, this horse, it's their understanding of the business, and able to, you like, understand horses that have run in previous years, you know, and they say, listen, we watch these horses, this horse run. You know, this horse was a good competitor. He trained horses that were good competitors. And then he applied that knowledge of his hands-on experience or view of horses that he had seen run throughout the years. And he applied that knowledge to speculating on what yep. the younger generation of those horses could do. And a lot of it's speculative, you know. It's just like the stock market. Sometimes you get a business, you want to invest in a business because you understand that the market's going to be there. You know, people like certain products that this company puts out, and they're going to take off. Well, you also have to understand horses. There's a speculative part of that business also. You know that this horse comes from a family of a certain amount of ability. It's hot right now. We're going to get in on the ground floor. Not when everything takes off and they're already skyrocketing through the marketplace. Pinhooking, you have to see them before they skyrocket through the marketplace, and you have to speculate that this horse in 1 year might bring more, or 2 years might bring more.
Right.
You bought him as a yearling or whatever, you know, and he might bring more because you know something about that horse by looking at him and maybe by knowing something about that horse's family. You know,
well,
previous generations.
And
it's a lot that you put together.
Well, exactly. And the element that separates, you know, those that, you know, that can financially leverage versus the ones that, you know, that can take the greatest chance is the ability to look at a young horse and see what it's going to look like 6 months later, 12 months
right.
later, 18 months later. And, you know, right? That's the gift.
The gift. And, you know, some people really have it. And, you know, one guy that stands out in my mind over the years, and I had a lot of contact with him, he could walk down the shed row and horses would just be shipped in, you know, 2-year-olds or young horses, or he could go to a sale, and I've been to sales that he's been at. And I'll tell you his name in a few seconds. But he'd go down the shed row. He says, Tone, you want to ride this horse early in it? I think he'll make it early in its 2-year-old year. This other one will probably be a latter stages of its 2-year-old year. This one we might have to send to the farm. We'll bring him back as a 3-year-old. And he'd go down the shed row with me. And I think, how can he tell all this? You know, his name was Robert W. Kamak. Bob Kamak had an unbelievable eye for young horses. Mm. And, you know, about, I'd say better than 75% of the time, maybe 90% of the time. But I'll I'll moderate. I'll say 75% of the time. A year or two later, you come back and say, hey, Bob, that's that son of a gun that you told me would win, right, as a three-year-old, wouldn't make it as a two-year-old. Or that's that horse you told me would go long as a three-year-old. That's that two-year-old. Where's that two-year-old you told me would make it early but probably wouldn't develop and, you know, stand out as the year went on? Oh, he's at the farm. And that's the three-year-old you just won on yesterday. And that's the one that won the stake last week that I told you about. And I think this guy's got an unbelievable eye. I mean, it was like he could see the future. I think I used to say, what do you have, a crystal ball? You know, you're telling me about all these horses, the ones that are going to develop early, the ones that are going to develop late, the ones that are going to be mature and be around for a long time, the ones that ain't. And he'd be 90% of the time right on. And that's a gifted eye. And I never forgot it. And, you know, he was one of those guys you learned a lot off of by riding for him, even when he used to like breaking your balls. And he did. He used to play Mike McCarthy and me against each other. You know, Mike would take one back. I'd put him on the lead. He'd tell Mike McCarthy, I told you to put that horse on the lead. I'm going to put Black on him next time. He'll be on the lead. Or I'd be on the lead with one. He said, I told you that horse isn't going to be a speed horse. I'm putting McCarthy on him next time. He'll take him back and relax. And he'd play us against each other and break our chops. And you know what? Every morning we'd be over at his barn. Hey, Mr. K-Mac, you need us to do anything for you this morning? Hey, Bob, what's going on? Yeah. But those guys are the guys that had an impact on my career, not just as winning races, but they taught me something about horses in general, guys like Bob K-Mac.
And gone now, it's hard to believe. It's almost 20 years he's gone.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm still talking about him. Two guys I'll always talk about is Walter Reese and Bob K-Mac, because when I got sober in December or in 1990, they were the first two guys that said, you know what, we'll find something for you. We'll get you started again. You know, we'll try to help you out. Maybe you won't mess up this next time. That was their answer. Maybe you won't mess up next time.
You know, and Tony, bringing up Bob K-Mac makes me wonder, I think of him when they run the Wide Country in Maryland, but
yeah,
are they still running the K-Mac? They had a race for K-Mac at Philadelphia. Are they still running that?
You know, why are they not running?
I can't recall.
I don't think they are, and it's sad if they aren't. But you lose track of things when you're not out there every day, and I don't think they are. But he was definitely a significant player and a good horseman. And I got so many stories. I can remember when he put Mike McCarthy on American Champ, and he was a speed horse, and we were in the match series, wound up winning the match series with him that year, which I'm glad to see they brought that back. But then Mike, I think, tried to raid him one day and take him back. He said, I'll put Black on American Champ. He ain't going to be fighting with him. He'll be on the lead with Black. And he took McCarthy off. He was amazing, but then he did the same thing he did to me he would do it to me. I can remember a horse I was riding with, Stormy Atlantic, and I think he took me off Stormy Atlantic, and he put McCarthy on, and he says McCarthy will get him the rate. You can't rate him, McCarthy, and of course he won. They always won their next start. Really broke your balls, you know. But he was a neat guy to ride for, and you never could do anything to get mad, even though at times, you know, it would really, really would like, man, why'd he do that to me? But that was his game. He liked to keep you in line. You know, he could keep you in line by dishing it out to you when you needed it, and dishing it out to you if you needed to get pulled up a little bit. But I'll never forget when I walked over to his barn and said, Bob, I need some help to get started again. I want to try to get started. And I walked up to him and Walter Reese, and I said, I'll never forget it. Just come to the barn, get on some horses. We'll find something for you. And he found a horse, I think her name was Toot LeMay, I think the name of the horse was. He said, you'll win with this horse first time out. And I think second time I won with her, and that was one of my first winners.
Which is great, but you're not telling the most important story. And in fact, I know you've mentioned it, but you've never, of all the things that you talk about that come up, you know, more than once, let's say,
you've never talked much about I'll Get Along, who you wrote for him and for the Chaplains.
Yeah, I'll Get Along. That was Smarty Jones.
Jones's dam.
She was one nasty, nasty. I could, well, bitch, I'm going to say it. She was. But you had to love her because she'd go out there, and if she didn't like something, she'd pin her ears. And if you went to go get up on her and she wasn't ready to take a step forward, you might get cow kicked if you got too close to her. And I'll never forget the groom that rubbed her hat. And I see Hat even to this day. He's still around. And I say, how many times I'll Get Along kick your hat? He said, I lost track how many times that witch kicked me. He used some other words. But she was one tough hussy. And she was kind of a come-from-behind sprinter that you could squeeze her maybe going a mile. But she was better, like, come-from-behind sprinting that would go long, you know. And but she was probably like a 7/8 of a mile horse or a mile horse tops. But she would go long. But she was one evil, nasty witch. And believe me, she would kick you on either side of the shed rail. You know how they say, stand on the left side, you won't get kicked? Yeah, go stand on the left side and let her walk past you. You might get kicked anyway. Don't worry about right or left. Worry about if you're standing far enough away from her when she walks past you, that if she gets an eye on you, she feels like kicking you, you better be out of range, asshole. And that was her.
She just did it for sport.
Oh, yeah. She must have I'll tell you one thing. When she was turned down in the field, now I never saw her turned out, but if she was turned out, I guarantee you she didn't make too many friends out in the paddock. she'd rather kick you or bite you than eat. She'd rather kick or bite than eat. She was something. I'll Get Along. And Mrs. Chapman, Mr. and Mrs. Chapman owned her. And, you know, it's kind of sad in one respect because Bob picked out the breeder. And I was told that he's the one who told him to go to Elusive Quality. He's the one who, yeah.
Yeah, he put the breeding together.
That was his, yeah, he put the breeding together and never got a chance to enjoy. But he was amazing. The guy was amazing when it came to young horses, when it came to breeding. He was an encyclopedia. You know, he's the one who put that together. And while that was all going on, I thought, oh, my gosh. You know, it's sad that he's not able to enjoy the fruits of his efforts. He was a great guy. Paying the extra times, but a great guy to ride for.
And he picked her out. She was a $40,000 purchase as a yearling and bred by Mrs. Genter.
Is that who? Yeah.
Mrs. Genter bred I'll Get Along. She was by Smile.
I remember her well, boy. I remember. You know,
she won a quarter of a million.
Yeah. Did it the hard way. You know, the money wasn't the same then.
12 wins, 39 career starts.
Yeah. Neat mare. Neat filly, neat mare. And she definitely made an impression on everybody that was around her. And it might have been an impression with her hind leg. That's the impression she made on you. And I'll never forget going on the racetrack. And I couldn't. Someone is like a galloper, someone is I couldn't. But she'd pin them ears back. You'd go in the 3/8 pole because his barn was over by the 3/8 pole. And sometimes she'd want to take you to the outside fence or gallop, like if she felt like it or didn't feel like it, pin her ears. And you'd try to get her to the pole to work her. And if you were lucky, it was a good morning you were having with her. And she'd go to the pole and work like a little champ. And other mornings you were fighting to get her off the outside fence like, Jesus. Come on, let's just get this work over with. And it depended on what mood she was in, you know?
Well, that's when you...
It depended on what mood she was in to how she got along with the riders that were on her back.
Well, when you hear horsemen describe them as witchy, that's what they're talking about.
Yeah.
Great memories
there, Steve. You brought back a bunch of great memories.
Well, there's always anytime paying tribute to Bob Kamak is time well spent. It was just a tragedy of mind boggling proportion. But I'm glad of all the things, because you talk about a lot of the horses that, you know, that of historic import, and you know, here's one that you know that is a conduit
to historic import as the dam of Smarty Jones. I mean, and she stood up as a nice she was a nice race mare, but as you know, having gotten Smarty Jones, she made a huge contribution to the game. I mean, that I mean, so many people talk about Smarty as the horse that, you know, that that brought them into the game and really the racing in Pennsylvania.
You know what? I have a little Smarty Jones over there now that I'm getting on every morning, and she really seems all right. Hasn't made it to the races yet. She's a 3-year-old. Her name's Smarty Socks, and she shows me every bit of ability and attitude of a horse that won't be a maiden real long.
Nice. You know, all right.
Little Smarty Socks, and I
Smarty
think
Socks
I
with an X. With an X,
you know,
or OCK?
The people named her because she's got three white socks. And I said, you should have named her, instead of Smarty Socks, you should have named her White Socks Fan, but spell it S-O-C-K-S, as they did. They spelled it, and they said, oh, we already named her Smarty Socks. I said, oh, it's a shame you didn't name her White Socks Fan, or White Socks Fan. But not S-O-X, you know, S-O-C-K-S. I thought it would have been kind of neat. Everybody thought you were a White Sox fan, and you're really just a fan of this racehorse. But, there's a lot of good memories, and Bob K-Mac was a big part of them, and so many other trainers over there, J.J. Kruppi, you know, I'm sure he beat me a ton of times, because when he ran horses, they were usually one of the horses that you'd want to ride, and Joe Bravo, you know, we went head-to-head a bunch of times, Joe Bravo, and but we always, you know, you beat each other out there on the racetrack as jockeys, but you come back to the room and you show mutual respect. Joe, I saw he had a big weekend, and I watched him finishing on the one race that he won. And I said, Joe, you ain't lost it yet. You're doing a great job.
We're going to lose it here, Tony. We're going to pull it up. We got to pull up, and we'll talk to you next week. Tony Black, everybody, back tomorrow. Weekend preview. Have a good day.